Hey, Margaret, I see Dr. Carpenter has joined us. So I'm going to call this April 1st Arizona State Board of Optometry meeting to order at 9:07. Ms. Chavez, would you call roll, please?
Yes, thank you, Madam President. Dr. Mastores?
Present.
Dr. Cohen? Dr. Cohen? Noted absent. Dr. Carpenter?
Present.
Ms. Galan? Ms. Galan?
Here.
Okay. Let the record show we do have two vacant seats.
Here.
Madam President? Yes.
Okay. And I am also.
Madam President, we do have a quorum. Ms. Okay. Whelan?
Veronica, could you please finish calling the board members? I believe you skipped Dr. Moffitt.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, Dr. Moffitt?
Present.
Okay, yeah. And Madam President, we do have a quorum. Ms. Whelan?
Present.
Noted. Veronica Chavez? Present. And legal counsel Mona Baskin?
Present. And in the board offices with Ms. Whelan, although we only have one screen, so I will be present and you will hear my voice. And when it comes to the training, maybe I can join in. Yes. All right. Thanks.
So just a comment, Margaret. Dr. Cohen said he's having trouble logging in. The screen says the host will let him in soon.
There he is, I believe, Madam Chair.
Oh, wonderful.
Dr. Okay. Cohen, are you with us?
I'm here. I apologize. My computer decided to upgrade itself 6 minutes to 9.
Let the record show Dr. Cohen joined the meeting at 9:09 a.m.
With apologies.
No worries. Thank you, Dr. Cohen.
Welcome, Dr. Cohen. I'm going to start by reading the board meeting statement of purpose. A license to practice optometry in the state is a privilege granted by the Arizona legislature through the Optometric Practice Act. In 1907, on behalf of the people of the state, the legislature created the Arizona State Board of Optometry to regulate the practice of the profession of optometry, issue licensure where appropriate, and in general, assure that the public, that the practice of optometry will be conducted with reasonable skill and safety by persons who meet the curriculum requirements to hold a Doctor of Optometry degree from an accredited optometry school. To enforce the Optometric Practice Act, the board reviews applications for licensure and complaints relative to the conduct of its licensed optometrist and is charged with determining if the provisions of the Optometric Practice Act are met. In addition, the board may promulgate rules and policies in conformity with the stated purpose of the board and the mission as mandated by law. As of January 1, 2019, all board meetings are digitally recorded with the recordings of the audio available to the public on the board's website under the consumer information link. Agenda item C, President's report. I have a small report this morning. Margaret and myself had a meeting with the Arizona Auditor General's office regarding their preliminary findings on March 18th, 2022. Generally, their report indicated or suggested changes be made with regard to conflict of interest compliance, the board's responsiveness to calls, proof of a government-issued ID during licensure, and open meeting law compliance. Some changes will be made to these preliminary findings. We'll receive a revised draft of the auditor's report around April 14th and a final report around April 29th. And then, Margaret, if you had further comments that you'd like to offer from that preliminary report.
Thank you, Madam President. I just wanted to add that the board did not agree with all of the findings, so we do have an opportunity to respond to the findings of the report. So we can respond saying that we maybe don't agree with the finding, but we'll implement whatever changes they're requesting. I feel that's a fair compromise and is usually acceptable by the auditors. So I think I'll be able to give the draft response to the board for review prior to submission or even after, but you'll be able to see the totality of the comments from the Auditor General's office.
Great. Thank you, Margaret.
Thank you.
Okay, so agenda item D, review, discussion, and possible vote on opening a complaint, jurisdiction, and purview determination. Just a little summary here. Patient MF presented for an eye exam at Dr. Zucker's office and was told he would need a mask or need to wear a mask. Patient MF presented what he claimed is a medical exemption card, and he was ultimately refused service. So I'd like to open this up to the board for discussion. If we feel like a possible complaint needs to be opened, then we can do so. Are there any comments from the board members?
Yes, hi, this is Dr. Cohen. In looking at it, I think there are two issues that I saw. One, I don't know if it falls under the purview or not of whether this is a violation of the Americans with Disabilities Act, whether we even have jurisdiction here. And the only thing that stood out that there's no update on is that the patient stated she had asked for her prior records and was given a long form to fill out. So the only thing I could possibly see is withholding of medical records, if indeed that even occurred. But I'm not sure in terms of our jurisdiction in a complaint like this.
So I agree with your comments. I also don't believe that since the patient didn't see the doctor in this instance, and since we review the behavior of the doctor in this instance, I'm not sure that we apply. Other comments from the board?
Madam President, may I interject?
Sure.
Thank you. Madam President, members of the board, I just want to remind the board that pursuant to ARS 32-1704B, the board does not have the authority to tell a licensee the fees they can charge, the type of practice they can own. They can tell them that. The type of way that they practice, the methods for practice, and the location and things like that. So historically, we just say that the board doesn't have the authority to regulate the practice itself, just the optometrist. So if that helps you. But I would refer to the statute if you have any questions.
Other comments from the board?
This is Dr. Carpenter. I also agree with what's been said that sounds like it's not something within our jurisdiction or responsibility.
Okay. Dr. Mastoris, any comments?
I agree.
Okay. Ms. Galan, any comments? Ms. Galan?
Sorry, mine's a little delayed. I hope everybody can hear me. I don't have anything to add. I agree with that as well.
Okay.
I agree with that as well. Sorry, it's a little delayed here.
Okay, I heard you. So it looks like we all agree, and there's no reason I don't think that we sought to open a complaint. Do we need to have any other conversation about this, Margaret, or can we just move on to our next item?
That's fine, Madam Chair. You can just restate that the board has made a decision not to open based on the fact that it's outside of the jurisdiction of the board.
Okay. So it looks like we have consensus that this appears to be outside of our jurisdiction and we are not going to open a complaint. Okay. Agenda item E, review, discussion, and possible action on pending endorsement applications. So we have a application for endorsement by Dr. Thomas Johnson. It looks like Dr. Johnson had a DUI in 1978 that was dismissed after a year with a clean driving record. Are there any concerns? That was my impression. Any concerns or discussion amongst the board members regarding Dr. Johnson's license? I see Dr. Mastoris is saying no. Dr. Carpenter?
I have no reservations.
Okay. Dr. Cohen?
Nor do I.
Okay. Ms. Galan?
I don't either.
Okay. I don't either. And can I have a someone make a motion then to accept Dr. Johnson's application?
As Dr. Cohen, I'll move that we accept Dr. Johnson's application.
Okay. Is there a second?
This is Dr. Carpenter. I will second that motion.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay. Then we'll vote on accepting Dr. Johnson's application. Ms. Galan, how do you vote?
Aye.
Thank you. Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
Dr. Mastores?
Aye.
I also vote aye. So it's motion passes 5-0. Okay. Agenda item F, review, discussion, and possible vote on pharmaceutical agent certificate applications. Number one and number two, Dr. Heidi Raitano and then Dr. Joseph Raitano. I had a question about this, Margaret, just as I was looking at it. It looks like they both already possess therapeutics licenses because they had their license number on the application. So is this just to get a more full scope or orals pharmaceuticals with their license? Is that the purpose of this?
Madam President, members of the board, you are correct, Madam President. Drs. Raitano had never applied for the pharmaceutical agent's certificate back in 2001 when the board moved to the PA license. So both of them currently only hold a DPA and a TPA, so this would bring them up to the higher scope.
I see.
They had the education, they just didn't know they had it.
Yeah, okay. Any discussion from the board members regarding these certificates of completion for this Arizona pharmaceutical course that both Drs. Raitano took? Okay. I see head shaking no. So no concerns by me either. It looks like a good class. I know both of those instructors. And so I have no concerns about it. Can I have a motion then to accept those certificates of completion for the Arizona pharmaceutical course?
Madam President, members of the board, would you mind using the verbiage approve instead of accept? It does have a little bit of a delineation.
Okay.
Thank you.
This is Dr. Carpenter. I motion that we approve their application.
For pharmaceutical agent, Dr. Carpenter?
For pharmaceutical agent.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Mastores, I second.
Any further discussion? Okay. We'll vote. Ms. Galan, how do you vote?
Aye.
Thank you. Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
Dr. Mastores?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 5-0. Agenda item G, Executive Director approval of new license applications pursuant to ARS 32-3123. It looks like in the period of March the 4th through March the 29th, A through D were accepted for licensure. That's acceptable, Margaret, correct? You don't want me to read their names, do you?
Oh, that's perfect. Okay. They're on the agenda, so they'll be able to be seen by the public.
Okay. Agenda item H, review, discussion, and possible action on approval of testing center for proctoring of jurisprudence exam pursuant to AAC R4-21-203C. Agenda item 1 there, Rowan Cabarrus Community College in Salisbury, North Carolina, is being suggested as a potential testing center. Are there any concerns regarding the proposal of this as a testing center for the jurisprudence exam?
This is Dr. Carpenter. I have no concerns.
Okay. Other board members?
Mastores, no concerns.
Okay.
Yes, this is Dr. Cohen. I just want to confirm that Ms. Whalen has done her typical work in assessing this facility the way she normally does.
Madam President, members of the board, Dr. Cohen, I absolutely have checked this out thoroughly. Thank you for asking.
Okay. Any concerns, Dr. Cohen?
No concerns.
Okay. Ms. Galan, any concerns?
No concerns.
Okay. Would someone like to propose a motion to accept the Rowan Cabarrus Community College as a testing center for our jurisprudence exam?
This is Dr. Cohen. I'll make a motion that we accept the Rowan Cabarrus Community College as a testing location.
Thank you. Is there a second?
This is Dr. Carpenter. I will second that.
Thank you. Any further discussion? So Dr. Cohen moved to accept the Rowan Cabarrus Community College as a acceptable location for our jurisprudence exam. Ms. Galan, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
Dr. Mastores?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 5-0. Agenda item I, Executive Director's Report. Margaret, I'll hand this over to you.
Thank you, Madam President. Members of the board, it's my pleasure to report this month. Once again, our fiscal year 22 appropriation is $241,900. There are 3 months left in our fiscal year. We run from July 1st to June 30th. As of February 28th, 2022, our beginning cash balance was $479,513 with an ending cash balance of $486,884. 66.67% of the fiscal year has elapsed with the board spending at 57.43%. Staff activity and updates from March 4th of 2022 to March 31st of 2022, 65 renewal applications have been processed. 4 new licenses were issued, 179 phone calls were fielded, and 1,528 emails were received and answered. The 2022 legislative session update. Again, we are in the second regular session of the 55th legislature, 2022, which began on Monday, January 10th, 2022. Yesterday was the 81st day of session. And so far, 1,560 bills were introduced, 840 in the House and 720 in the Senate. There are currently 106 total bills transmitted to the governor, 48 from the House and 58 from the Senate. Of those, the measures signed by the governors, there's an 84 bills total that have been signed by the governor, 29 from the House and 55 from the Senate. The two bills I wanted to mention this time around, I'll do a full legislative wrap-up at our next meeting, which I'm expecting in June. House Bill 2612, Occupational Regulation, was signed by the governor and chaptered on March 24th of 22. That deletes the statutory references relating to a person's virtues with respect to occupational regulation. We call it moral turpitude or good moral character. That has now officially been removed and will be removed from our statutes as a requirement for licensing. Senate Bill 1637 was not on my radar initially. Our board is not part of this bill. It still is not part of this bill, but Dr. Stacy Meyer from the Arizona Optometric Association reached out to me earlier this week that the sponsor of the bill was told by his peers in the legislature that in order for the bill to pass with the three chapters that were originally included, they wanted all of the health regulatory boards included. So this bill is called Health Professionals, Business Entities, and Interference. It would add section ARS 32-3230 to the general statutes and the 3200s that we all follow besides our board statutes. It does currently only affect chapters 13, 14, and 17. Under Title 32 or Chapter 16, as optometry, it permits specified licensed healthcare professionals to engage in the practice of medicine in any form of business entity. Again, it currently only affects the medical doctors, the physician's assistants, and the nurse practitioners. However, it also is in direct conflict with our excellent statute, ARS 32-1753, our practice designations. I, along with Dr. Meyer, reached out to Senator Pace to explain the issue that we may have with this bill, and that the board, I, on behalf of the board, said the board would not support this bill because we currently have a substantial practice designations law. And removing that or adding us into this other bill would substantially impact your ability to practice in regards to public protection because it would remove all of the requirements for how you schedule patients, your billing and your fees and all that kind of stuff would be directly affected. Also, the biggest one would be the insurance companies, excuse me, how they would do credentialing under the new business model. So I encourage you to look at that bill. I hope that, you know, that we don't get thrown into that because also we would have to repeal our practice designations law. So I have my eyes on that, and it hasn't really moved anywhere. I know Dr. Meyer did report back after the meeting that Senator Pace was open to leaving optometry out of it or to at least incorporating our current law into that law. So we'll see what happens in the next month or two. Session is due to end somewhere in May. they usually hold out for the budget, so sometimes the legislators are here until June 30th so they can sign the budget or present the budget to the governor for a signature. Are there any future agenda items that you would like to see on the next agenda? Oh, I did skip something. I'm sorry. Let me go back to my agenda here. The ARBO annual conference is coming up on June 14th, I believe. It's the second weekend in June. It's a little bit earlier than normal. It's in Chicago, Illinois. So if any of you are interested in attending the ARBO conference, I encourage you to think about it and let me know so I can make travel arrangements or at least know that you're traveling for reimbursement purposes. So you can email me, call me, let me know what your thoughts are. It's a 2.5-day conference. It's Sunday, Monday, and half a day Tuesday. And most of you are familiar with ARBO, so I won't regale you with their information, but it should be an interesting conference, and it's the first time in 2 years that we have met back in person. So,
what are the dates again, Margaret? Sorry to interrupt you.
I believe, let me look at my calendar. Excuse me for looking down here.
I have June the 14th as a Tuesday.
Oh, okay. So that's not the right date. Sorry. It is June 11th, 12th, and 13th. Normally it's like the weekend after, but they moved it earlier. I think it was some space issues and when the AOA is. So it's usually we meet, the ARBO meets right before the American Optometric Association's big annual optometry's meeting conference.
Okay.
So then
you like to have someone from the board present, don't you?
I prefer it just because I can, otherwise I have to be the delegated voting member, which, of course, I'm happy to do to represent Arizona. But it's always helpful to have a board member present. And we will also take the Assistant Attorney General this year for the first time because we haven't usually had the funds or the time available to take Ms. Baskin. So it'll at least be me and her. So if anyone else wants to join us, again, you're more than welcome. If you go to arbo.org, you can look at the, I think the meeting agenda is posted already, so you can kind of see what the topics are and things like that.
Is there any interest from the board members about attending? Anyone wish to go or wish to be considered to go?
This is Dr. Carpenter. I would be interested. I do have a conflict with those dates this year, but in the future, I might be interested in going.
Okay. Thank you. They have the conference every year, whether it's virtual or in person, and it does move around. I feel like the one next year is in Washington, D.C., so it'll be in a different location. But and usually the dates are later. It's usually the third weekend in June, yeah. So I'm not sure.
It is June 18th through 20th in Washington next year.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Cohen.
Good. Yeah, later in June is better for me, so. Maybe okay, we'll look perfect. At that.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Mastros, I have also have a conflict at that time, but thank you for the invite.
Of course. I know they are doing a portion virtually. They said they won't do the whole conference virtually, but they will have some. So I will email you when I know all of you, when I know what that is, so that you can join if you are available for those couple of hours for whatever the discussion that they're virtualizing.
Okay. Dr. Cohen, any interest? Ms. Galan, any interest?
Unfortunately, I wouldn't be able to attend this year.
Now, unfortunately, I've got a couple babies at home, so not this year, maybe in a couple of years.
I'll give it some thought, Margaret, okay?
Okay, perfect. Like I said, you know, I've gone with or without any board members, so either way is fine. It's just a good opportunity for you all to get some extra insight into public protection. So with that, I will move to – so no future agenda items, correct, if I didn't hear anything. Our future board meeting dates, I actually mapped out based on the meetings that we've had this year so far. I would be looking at June 3rd, which is the first Friday of June, August 5th, October 7th, and December 2nd. But for the immediate future, if June 3rd is agreeable for everybody, that would be great.
Could you repeat those dates, Margaret?
Yes. June 3rd, August 5th, October 7th, and December 2nd. As a reminder, we're mandated to meet at least 6 times per year. This is our third board meeting of the year, so that would finish out our calendar year of meetings at 7 total.
Hi, this is Dr. Cohn. Margaret, the only date I might have a conflict, I may be traveling the morning of August 5th.
Okay.
So I may be able to impart, but I'm not sure. I have to double-check travel plans.
Thank you, Dr. Cohen. And again, these are just tentative as a plan. We can certainly function with a quorum of 4 if Dr. Cohen is not available. So there's lots of options.
This is Dr. Carpenter. For me, June 3rd, I think will be a struggle, but I should, the others, I should be okay based on what I know now.
So. Okay. So in that case, Drs. Cota Mastoris and Ms. Galan, are you available on June 3rd?
It's Dr. Cohn, yes, I am.
Dr. Mastoris. I'm okay for all of them right now.
Ms. Galan?
Me too. All those dates are fine.
Okay, because Dr. Moffitt, I believe you are available on the 3rd.
I am. I put them all on my calendar, so okay. I'm okay with all those dates.
Okay, well, we have Ms. Baskin as well, so we would have a quorum of 4, so if that's acceptable, I would like June 3rd to be our next board meeting from today. And then that concludes my director's report, Madam President.
Okay. So agenda item J, call to the public. Are there any public members that would like to address the board? I hear nothing. Agenda item K, board member training, presentation, and discussion. So Ms. Baskin, we'll hand it over to you for training.
Okay, great. Margaret, is there any way that we can get that PowerPoint put up?
Sure.
All right. Well, you know what? Before we do that, I can give us a brief introduction. So there's this is a wonderful opportunity for me to get to talk to all and for you to be able to ask questions. So it's one of my favorite things to do. I've done it in the past for the board and have come up with a lot of different training materials that you can review. There are some of them that I think I would want to update or maybe streamline a little bit, but it's just really important. And I want to tell you all that I was taking notes on the board meeting today. And you did a great job. I mean, this board intuitively understands and follows the law and makes a very, very clear record. And that's what board meetings, that's the whole function of having a board meeting, is so that the public is apprised of what board business is going to be presented,
that they know specifically what those items are based on the agenda, and that they hear the full discussion of the board members in their decision making. Now, because we have virtual board meetings, it makes it a little bit of a challenge, but I will tell you that this board just pivoted perfectly based on, number one, the definition of meetings within the state statutes allowed for electronic board meetings, but also I would say to what Ms. Whalen was able to pull off, she just made it seamless. So we were able to go ahead and pivot to having board meetings electronically so that we did not miss a beat during the pandemic, which was great. Before I get into the whole practical tips for the regulatory board meetings, I wanted to tell you I'm not going to go through all 100 slides today. It would be too much. I hope that we can have kind of an interactive discussion today, and I went over it over the last couple of days, and I think I'm going to stop at slide 40. I think that's going to be more than enough. And I have some segues that I'm going to have Ms. Whalen go ahead and jump in, which I haven't told her when they are, but I told her she is so good, she'll be able to handle it. But the first thing I want to talk about is, why are we even doing this board training? And a board statute, a general healthcare statute, answers that question, and it's 323218. And what it's entitled is Health Profession Regulatory Boards, Members, Trainings, and Definitions. And this came about in 2015, where it really codified that new board members that are placed on, that are appointed by the governor's office on regulatory boards, obtain training regarding what their functions are. So what this requires, this is not every year for 12 hours. This is every time a new board member is appointed, and I'm going to read specifically from the statute so that we're very clear on this. Each member of a health regulatory board shall complete a 12-hour training within 1 year after the member's initial appointment to the board. So I believe our two new members, well, we have three new members. We have Ms. Galan, and we've got Dr. Carpenter and Dr. Cohen. So those would be the three that we would make sure that from their date of appointment, they have gone through 12 hours of training. And now, Ms. Galan, are you currently on other boards, or you have served on other boards? So
I'm currently on another board.
All right. So to the extent that you have obtained maybe training from that board, we could go ahead and look at that, Ms. Whalen can, to see if that would kind of credit toward the 12 hours, or we can just move forward with the 12 hours for the optometry board, because we have both Dr. Cohen and Dr. Carpenter to participate in that. So what are the areas? What are the areas as far as this whole board training and what it has to do with administrative management, disciplinary procedures? Now, with the board, your disciplinary procedures are through either the informal interview or informal hearing procedures or a formal hearing. Now, we haven't had one. We haven't had either one of those in quite a while, but that's definitely going to be part of the training. Administrative procedure, rule adoption, licensure as they apply to the regulatory board. And so who can do the training? Well, the Office of the Attorney General, so it could be me. I could bring in somebody from, let's say, the criminal division if the board wanted some training on criminal statutes or how we look at mandatory disclosures that are required of licensees as far as pursuant to their criminal background. I certainly have that included in some other training prior to coming to the licensing and enforcement section of the Attorney General's office. I was within the criminal division as a criminal prosecutor working within the criminal appellate section. So I do have an area of expertise for me that I can certainly share with the board. So the Office of Attorney General, obviously Margaret or any other staff. So because Margaret's pretty a one woman show, it would be Margaret. And I think that what would count also toward board training is every month she has talked to you at length regarding a legislative update, and I think that could definitely count toward board member training, because that is one of the areas it impacts the administrative regulation of licensees. And I think it is really important. And I will tell you that your executive director gives you a very detailed update regarding what's happening legislatively. The office, the Department of Administration, ADOA, we could have them come and speak to you. The Auditor General, so I know that we're undergoing an audit. We can certainly invite the Auditor General to provide some training regarding their statutes. They have a whole bank of statutes that they are pursuing and that they conclude and review during the whole audit. So that could be something that the board could ask. Outside educational institutions, I think that really could maybe ARBO could fall under that umbrella, and any other provider that is approved by the board. So let me just go ahead and touch on ARBO. In the past, we had 2 years that were virtual. Is that right, Margaret?
Yes.
And I know that last year, Dr. Mastoris and Dr. Moffitt attended. I attended. It was great. I really think that ARBO is just provides kind of that overall, the entire nation, what's going on within other optometry boards, other states, you know, especially with the emergence of telehealth and all of the issues related to how boards were able to address and continue business during the pandemic. So that is a great opportunity if you can attend. And if there's a virtual portion that's offered, I know it's June, it's really hard, it's Father's Day in the month. We have, you know, everybody, that's kind of the beginning of vacations. But even if you can jump in for part of the virtual, I think it's very, very helpful. And just kind of gives us all that a different perspective, which is very helpful. So that would count. So another section in here is section C, and it says any board action taken by a health professional regulatory board is not subject to challenge or invalidation because a board member has not completed the training. So as what that's saying is that somebody couldn't challenge a board decision saying that, you know, a board member X, you know, had 9 hours instead of 12. Therefore, all of their decisions should be invalidated. So that is something really important to know. So does anybody have any questions about training or any ideas or what else you would think you would want to have in addition to the training that I'm here to provide and happy to provide? No?
This is Dr. Moffitt. I'll just say I think the new board members should maybe offer their thoughts on this. If they have areas that they feel like they'd like some additional training, this is a good time to discuss it.
Drs. Cohen or Carpenter, did you have any areas where you feel like you're not as sure of the board's process? That would be helpful.
Yes, this is Dr. Cohen. One of the problems in answering that is you don't know what you don't know until you know it.
Okay.
So, no, I can't think of anything specific. I'm looking forward to getting a better understanding overall and may have some specifics as we go along.
Okay.
That's probably a post-training question.
Yes, that is. That's probably a post-training question, but yes. And Margaret and I have kind of brainstormed some other areas about what we have thought we can provide training. And this is something that even could extend beyond, you know, as far as new member training, but just keeping the board updated. And every year, I have provided an update regarding the final legislation after all the bills have been signed and passed. You get a confidential memo regarding the legislation that will impact the board. So that is considered part of the training, and that's usually done. I think we got delayed this year because of I'm not too sure, but usually that's done in August, September. Maybe this year it will be done in October. And that will certainly count toward training. So turning to the first slide.
Sorry, Mona, I don't want to interrupt you, but I didn't want to move forward just until sure. I'd offered two thoughts. So sure. When it comes to training, I think that as a new board member, as I have been in the past, and then as we have new board members, I think training in the area of you know, procedural rules for mm-hmm. going through the meeting mm-hmm. are important and would make the new board members feel more comfortable. So I think, you know, expected procedures and common procedures of the meeting mm-hmm. would be a really good area to go through, just kind of in a comprehensive start to finish way. And then I would also say that I think although this is spelled out in the statutes, the procedures that we go through, if we have any kind of disciplinary concern, but mm-hmm. it would be really nice to have kind of an open session where we go through it step by step, or an open discussion, right, where we go through mm-hmm. it step by step, where board members can also ask questions during the training about those procedures. Because every time we're faced with something along those lines, I always feel like I have 100 questions and I don't really know how it's going to go. And so I think that that would go a long way to helping the board members feel comfortable. Again, procedures, how the board, you know, what's expected, what is okay, what's not okay, do's and don'ts of a meeting, and also then going through the procedural of any kind of disciplinary actions, levels of disciplinary action, what that includes, how we would proceed, all of that. I think it would be wonderful to sit back and have an interactive sort of lecture about those things. So those are my thoughts on it.
Well, that is, those are points well taken. I think that would be, that's something that we certainly can do. We could dedicate maybe one training session to like the informal proceedings, and we can actually, there is a script that the board has, and then Margaret and I can kind of refresh it. So we would have a script that we could review. I can go through the statutes. I can go through, because when you go through an informal proceeding, and I can just touch on this because that is a really good point, Dr. Moffitt. The board has limited disciplinary options, whereas when they would move something to a full formal hearing, which I did put on a full formal hearing, I believe, in November or December of, when was that, 2019? Mm-hmm. So at that point, that was a full hearing that was held, formal hearing that was held before the board. And in a formal hearing, the board has its everything's on the table as far as revocation, suspension, civil penalty, probation, all of the disciplinary and non-disciplinary options are available to the board. But we will definitely do that. The first part, the slides that I have, 1 through 40, that I went through, are really focused that it's going to set the table for like a deeper dive into some of the procedures. And it's to discuss about just exactly what you said. What are the procedures? What is the best way to run a meeting? So today I was taking notes on the board today, and you guys get an A. Okay. Doctors Cohen and Carpenter, you made some very good motions today. I'm going to talk a little bit about motion practice right now. So I'm not going to be, you know, married to these slides, because I do think it's appropriate. When we are, and I'm going to say this multiple times, but I'm going to start out with it. When we are virtual, and even if we're in person, there is an audio recording that Ms. Whalen is making that is required to be placed on the website within 3 working days after the meeting. And the public needs to be able to know who made comments, who made the motion. So the speaker, whenever you speak in the board meeting, and Dr. Mastoris, you do this great too. This is Dr. Mastoris. You know, I agree. This is Dr. Cohen. I move. This is Dr. In fact, I'm quoting. I move to approve the application of. Okay, let's say it's Dr. Baskin. Okay, I move to approve that. You state your name. You make a full, clear motion. It's approving. What are you approving? The application. The application of who? The doctor. And then we had Dr. Carpenter, and Dr. Carpenter clearly stated, "This is Dr. Carpenter. I second the motion." And then, Dr. Moffitt, I can't improve on how you handled that. You did a roll call vote. All the members stated either, you know, stated their approval. So it would be either a yes or, you know, a yay or a nay, yes or a no. And then at the end, what you did is you said the motion passed 5-0. Okay. That is best practice. You made a clear record so anybody listening is going to know what happened. So in 5 years, let's say we want to go back, what happened on April 1st of 2022 at, you know, regarding this doctor, this doctor's application, somebody's going to be able to go to the audio recording and they're going to know clearly who made the motion, what was it for, and how did it pass. So that is, that's exactly what, that's what the kind of the premise behind all of parliamentary procedure is in board meetings, to make a clear and accurate record and to record what the board's discussion was and to make sure that it is in conformity with the agenda, because your agenda is really the roadmap, and a lot of work goes into the agenda. And Margaret and I always confer, and we've been working together for a while, so we have a fabulous working relationship. So call me, we talk. I mean, we're back and forth. Okay, I can call you in 10 minutes. A lot goes on, and we discuss things, and then we rediscuss them because we want to make sure that the agenda is really clear and concise. And a couple things that are really clear and concise about the board's agenda are, for example, legislative session updates. Ms. Whalen provides you with specific, with the House bills, the Senate bills, and what they are. So anybody that's going to look at the agenda says, oh, I wonder what they're going to talk about at the optometry board meeting. It's very, very clear on here. And that's the goal of the agenda. And I'm going to talk about it later in the training. If it's not on the agenda, Ms. Whalen and both myself are going to politely tell you that that's something that we're going to have to take a pause on, and we can put it on a future agenda, because we cannot, you're legally not permitted to discuss things that the public wasn't noticed on. So it's not intended to be rude or disrespectful. It's just that we want to stay within the bounds of the law. So this presentation really is based on two separate premises. One, the statutes and the administrative rules regarding board practice. You know that we have the 32 1700s, which is really chapter 16, and it contains your specific board statutes. Now, there's many other areas of the law that impact the board. And one of them is the 32-3200s. That's the health. Those are statutes regarding the Health Regulatory Board. And that's where the one that I just started out with, the 32-3218. And those are going to be specific statutes in there. And I think I have a whole other PowerPoint presentation on that we did for the board. And we went through all of those. But those are companion statutes that kind of augment what the board statutes are. So, for example, the board training's in there. The board statute of limitations is in there, which it's 4 years with some exceptions. And then some other statutes, such as how to vote, roll call on any disciplinary matter is required. So we're going to talk about the statutes and the administrative rules. And my job and Margaret's job are to make sure that the board knows what those are and follows those. The other parts of this is just going to be best practice, and that would be based on my years of experience, and there's also been some input. There was another attorney from our office that started out with this presentation. It's been kind of morphed, and I took it and added to it and changed it a little bit. But she is really the one that started out with this, and her name is Nancy Beck, and she's retired right now, and I think Margaret knew her. So you're going to get best practice, and you're going to also get a review of the statutes. We have a the next slide is, I think, is Justice Scalia. Yeah. I'm sorry, and he has recently, unfortunately, passed away. He was quite a feisty justice, and what he said is, administrative law is not for sissies. You should lean back, clutch your sides of your chairs, and steel yourselves. So although we are not dealing with criminal cases, the board deals with highly sensitive information. We deal with very serious complaints, and we deal with some very serious outcomes in cases as far as potential disciplinary outcomes. And, you know, those could be as severe as a suspension or a disciplinary action of revocation. So this is not a sleepy area of the law. It has been an area of the law that has been in the forefront, I would say, for the since about 2015. And it's just going through a transformation across the country. You heard Margaret talk about the recent bill that was passed that deleted the good moral character requirement for licensees applying. And it's just gone through a lot of changes. So, again, our job is to keep you apprised of what those changes are and to make sure that the board practices within the bounds of the law. Okay, the primary duties are to protect the public, and your essential functions are, through the laws, are to license applicants. And we know that you approve any license application that comes before Margaret. If there's any question on it, Margaret is going to bring that to you for approval. So, for example, we had one on the agenda today. If there's anything that requires board discretion, it comes before the board. Now, Margaret, do you want to talk about your authority that was granted for you to issue licenses that are completely clean?
Sure. Thanks, Mona. So back in 2018, the law was passed. Is actually the governor's own law that he ran through the legislature, had run through the legislature, allowing delegated authority for executive directors. And that was part of his rollback initiative for more expedient licensing. So it did really successfully allow the delegation of that or extension of that board's authority to the executive directors to accept and approve applications without further board approval, assuming there was no incidents reported or anything was disclosed on the application. So that has been a really successful process.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. And that is also included, those licensees that have obtained licensure by Ms. Whalen, that is on your agenda, and that is to let the public know who has received licenses. The board, these licenses have already been issued, so it's for an informational basis only, but I think that is, again, the whole purpose of the open meeting law and having a board meeting is to give notice to the public regarding what actions have been done by the board. All right, the second function is to regulate the profession. And that's through receiving complaints and investigating the allegations and presenting that information to the board for discussion and final deliberation. So that could be a board complaint that was received, or that could be an own motion complaint by the board. But those are the two general functions that the board is doing, to license and to regulate the profession through the complaint process. All right, then turning next, parliamentary procedure. This is always, I mean, this is, sounds like a kind of a boring topic, but actually it's kind of interesting, but I'm just a nerd on it. But, okay, Robert's Rules. And I, in preparation for this, I read Robert's Rules. And I want to tell you, Robert's Rules are not, it's a formal system of parliamentary procedure. Some boards are required to follow them. None of the health regulatory boards within Arizona are. But some statutes say that you must follow Robert's Rules. So Robert's Rules of Order is a very distinct and specific way to run board meetings and to take motions and to deal with board business. So we use them as a guide, but they are not dispositive. We're not required to follow them. And currently the board uses a blend of those, and we do use scripts to facilitate the board meetings again, like if we have an informal proceeding or a formal proceeding. But the whole purpose, again, is do we have a clear motion? Do we know who made it? Do we have a second? After we have the motion and the second, discussion can happen again. It could happen preceding the motion, and Dr. Moffitt does a great job of facilitating discussion. And I think particularly since we're all, you know, virtual, we're all in the virtual world, we're not in the same room, Luckily, we have Zoom and we're able to see each other, so that kind of helps with a lot of the whole nonverbal cues. But I think that this board does an excellent job of discussing the issues, discussing the motions, and making final decisions, although in some cases, you know, those are very hard decisions. So as far as the scripts, we will come back in another training session and bring those before the board, and we can go ahead and discuss those. All right. So parliamentary procedure, it's, again, Robert's Rules guidelines, not dispositive, and what we have to make sure is that we do not violate the open meeting law through kind of engrafting any kind of parliamentary procedure onto our process. But again, the way the board does it is very clear, very concise, and we do make a great record. All right, just as an aside, some of the graphics in here are really old, and I left them in there because I just thought it was, you know, it's clip art, and I know clip art is kind of like from, you know, colors, the 90s. But I did leave them in because I just thought it was kind of vintage. All right. Then we have Thomas Jefferson, his rules. No one is to disturb another in a speech by hissing, clapping, spitting, speaking, or whispering to another, nor stand up and interrupt him. And again, not that I've ever seen any kind of behavior like this, but what the underlying premise of this is to say that we have to have a full and fair discourse and full and fair discussion. And again, there may be times when there's some really ardent disagreements among the board, but it's always professional and it's always to air out all different sides of it, and everybody brings with them their own personal, professional, interpretations and, credibility determinations to the decision making. And so that's just part of the process. So that goes back to, Thomas Jefferson. Moving on, we've got, again, Robert's Rules, a quotation to assist the assembly to accomplish the work for which it was designed in the best possible manner. So, again, that's just the policy behind it. And then why do we use it? Why do we have all of these, the rules and the scripts? It's really to, again, help you carry out your statutory duties. It enables a process to let everybody be heard. And, again, the board and Dr. Moffitt is going to ask for your input, and people are great. I agree. Yes, I think that was well said. I agree with those two salient points. However, I would add a third one. And yes, I reviewed all the information and I agree or I disagree. And these are the reasons why. Again, it promotes fairness. It makes sure that we are efficient. And again, as a former appellate attorney, I know how to make a record, and I know, and I'll just take a pause here. Why do we want a record? All right. You want a record, well, number one, for the public so that they know. But in the event, if we ever had an appeal and any case went up to Superior Court, because that's the first level of appeal, then the Court of Appeals, and then discretionary review is only 5% of cases are taken by the Arizona Supreme Court. I don't think we're going to be getting to the U.S. Supreme Court because we don't really have constitutional federal jurisdiction to get us there. But you want to be, we would have to have a transcript, and we would want that transcript to reflect and to support all the board's decisions. So that's why we need a record for future appeals, for any other questions, and also to notify the public.
Excuse me, I just wanted to throw in from a non-attorney perspective, the reason that I run our board meetings the way I do with, like Mona said, the hybrid Robert's Rules is to establish a sense of decorum. We need to show the public that we are very serious about what we do, and that we have credibility to do it, and that we care about the issues that are coming before the board, because most of them are generated from the public. That's our sole purpose for existence. So with formality comes formality, if the board were to be run a little more informally, you do get that informality back from the board members, and then I think that damages the credibility just a little bit. I encourage you to look at the minutes for other boards. There's several other boards and commissions, you know, where you can see the audio or see the video or the audio just to see how they run their meeting, and you can tell the difference, you know, how we all do it just a little bit differently.
I would agree with that, and I believe the formality and the soliciting and asking everybody's opinion, recognizing everybody by their proper name, by their surnames, is just lends to it. And so I would really support that. And I would also say there is a wide range of what goes on. So anyway, I think that the way the board conducts itself is best practice. All right. So as far as the board, who do we elect? Well, this is the statute, your 32-1703, that talks about the election of officers. And we have the board president. And at this point, I'm going to turn it over to Margaret so she can talk about this is done annually and just how she goes about putting this on the agenda and how she addresses this.
Thank you. So on or before June 30th, we are required by law, as Mona said, to elect officers. The officers can remain in the same positions in which they are currently sitting, or the board can elect different board members to serve in the positions of president and vice president. There are several different ways of having officers. Our board has always had a president and a vice president. Some other boards have a secretary and a president. They have a vice chair. Or they call it a chair and vice chair, just a little bit verbiage. I'm sure there's a little bit of a delineation between those terms, but we've always just used president and vice president. It doesn't really matter the experience of the board member. You're all equally knowledgeable for the purposes of the practice of the profession. So, you know, anybody can serve, including the public for that matter. The public members are also eligible for election to one of the officer positions. So it really just depends how the board functions as a whole. If they really appreciate the way the incumbent is in the president position, they can, you know, continue to vote them. I think Dr. Pisaga served like 5 years as president of the board. So it's really your gig. It's up to you. So.
Definitely.
That's just a requirement. So we need to do it regardless of whether we keep the same people or elect different board members.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I would say going to the next slide, the board president has a really important role in not only maintaining the order of the meeting, but also to make sure that everybody is heard and is the individual that, like, leads us through the agenda and is going to be the presiding officer of any informal and formal proceedings. So it is a very, very important role. And again, maintains order in the meeting. And, you know, this is usually done through the reminders of the civility process that the board has, that, you know, when we have consider complaints, reminding individuals to only speak one person at a time, that we need to maintain the confidentiality of patients through the use of their initials. And I know that Margaret, prior to when she's noticing people for the board meeting, yeah, does give them a written reminder to only use initials to maintain their confidentiality. Did you have a question?
Larry Davies, she doesn't like
him. Mr. Carpenter, did you have a question?
Mm-mm. Okay. All right. And of course, maintaining professionalism and courtesy does not do all the talking. And Dr. Moffitt, you do not do all the talking. I will say that you do, again, have people join in. And so we do have often a very robust discussion on cases and prompts, comments, and necessary, if necessary, and then clarification. So if there's a topic that's been tossed around, maybe a summation, and I do think that all those things do happen. And again, this is just saying what the board president or board chair assists the board in staying on task, because again, like I said before, we can only address items that are specifically on the agenda. So let's say we're talking about the ARBA. I'm going to give an example on this. So let's say we're talking about the ARBA conference, and then it leads into a discussion of one of the topics at the ARBA conference that has to do with some new regulations from the FTC regarding contact lenses. Okay, we couldn't delve in and having a big, we could not have a big substantive discussion on that, but the board chair could say, you know, I guess that was a very interesting topic that we had at ARBO. However, if we want to have a more substantive discussion on that, we'll put that on the agenda for the future. So that would be one of the rules. Redirects members or speakers when necessary, and that would be usually during when we're hearing complaints, just to let them know we've read all the materials, all the materials have been reviewed by the board, and just to kind of keep everybody on task so we don't go on and on and on, so that the conversation and the review of cases is very, very focused. Again, I said that the board president is the presiding officer for a formal hearing and informal interviews. Now, if we do go forward, and this is, I do want to kind of incorporate some training on those proceedings. Again, you will have a script to follow and a formal hearing. In that case, this is what would happen. My role would shift. Like right now, I am your lawyer. I am the lawyer for the board. And Margaret is your executive director, and I work through her. And again, we communicate all the time regarding board business and in developing the agenda and moving cases forward. But if you have a formal hearing, my role shifts and I become the prosecuting attorney. So if you move a matter to a formal hearing, I now have that case and I'm not the board's legal advisor. So someone else from my office would be coming to the board as an independent advisor, and they would sit where I sit right now as your confidential legal advisor. They would advise you on the case, and I would be in that role representing the people of the state of Arizona, and I would be prosecuting the case. So just to kind of explain that process. And again, making a clear and adequate record of the meeting, it's just really important. And let me just talk really quickly as far as written minutes and the audio. Under state law, the minutes, written minutes, are really discretionary, but the audio, posting the audio and making a very clear record, is not. That's required by the board. Again, we're going to have another quotation. There is a degree to which you can sort of push, encourage, support, direct, but the speakership isn't a dictatorship. And again, we certainly don't have that with Dr. Moffitt. We certainly did not have that with Dr. Kosagas. We've been, really fortunate in that way. As far as what is a meeting, again, this is part of the open meeting law that's dispersed throughout the entire Arizona revised statutes, but specifically under 38431-4A, it's a gathering of a quorum. And that means a quorum is one more than the majority of members of the body. And you have to have a quorum to hold your meeting. And you have to have your quorum to make decisions. So we're going to talk about conflicts of interest, but let's say an individual has conflicts of interest and is unable to participate in a case, we could potentially lose our quorum and have to continue the matter to a later time. So the quorum is dispositive. Now, there has been, I have heard this, not from this board, but people have asked, well, if we lose our quorum, can we just still go through the agenda but just not make any decisions? And the answer to that is no. No quorum, no meeting. So what constitutes a meeting? And this is really important because this is how this statute, I love the statute, because we were able to go forward during the pandemic. We didn't, and I will tell you, I've participated on other national conferences and spoken, and I have a pretty good network of attorneys from other states, and they had to pass emergency rules to be able to even conduct business. So Arizona was poised to move forward with, during the pandemic. So it includes, electronic communications. Now, I put on here caution, email or group text, because any type of electronic communication can constitute a quorum and can constitute a meeting. So board members want to be really careful, and I believe Margaret puts a disclaimer on all of her emails or blind copies you all so you can't accidentally press reply all. But let's say, for example, I'll give you a hypothetical here, and it has never happened with this board, but there is Ms. Whalen sends out an email to everybody, I won't use her. I'll use an executive director, sends out an email to everybody, to all members of the board, and says, we will be discussing some proposed legislation, and it is going to impact the board, and we would want to get the board's position on this. And let's say everybody's name is up under the sense, and you could, or under the CC, and everybody starts replying, well, I'm against it, well, I'm for it. That would actually constitute a board meeting, and we would have to go through a ratification process. It would have to be put on the agenda. So do not reply all. Do not communicate. All board discussion has to occur in the board meeting, with the board sitting in a quorum, properly agendized to discuss that matter. So group text, email, I don't think we're having a group text, but I just included that in there in case some, you know, it's a possibility. I know that it doesn't happen here, but just to be very cautious about what could constitute a meeting. All right, quorum requirement. Again, one of those vintage little clocks there that I wanted to include. I don't know. I know, but I'll just, as an aside, I remember my kids had to learn that. Mom, I don't understand the clock with those hands, because, you know, everything is digital. And I remember they had to buy them one and go through it. This is what it is. Kind of like explaining to them what a payphone was, because they didn't know. It wasn't until we went to London that they saw them, and they were just so fascinated. Why don't we have this in America? So anyway, that's just a little aside. But as far as the quorum requirement, the meeting should start on time as specified on the agenda. And, you know, only if a quorum is present. Do not start the meeting before the time that's listed on the agenda. So if the meeting is supposed to start at 9, we have everybody there at 8:45, we have to wait till 9 o'clock to start the meeting. Now, let's say we know that a member is going to be delayed, and we've had some really horrific, when we were in person, I know there was one big accident on the I-10, and we were delayed by about 20 minutes, and I think I was even delayed. So in that point, Ms. Whalen would get on the she would open the meeting and say, we have some members that are delayed. So just to make sure that you are aware of that. Okay. I think that this is just some best practice language regarding how to call the meeting to order. Dr. Moffitt does this. We want to make sure that we're really clear on the date and the time and the time of the meeting. So, for example, the board did something really good today. Dr. Cohen, not to call you out in a negative way, but you had problems getting in on the meeting. I've had that in the past too. And Ms. Whalen will state on the record, Dr. Cohen has joined the meeting at 9:09, which was 2 minutes after the meeting started. But that's the kind of record that we need to have. We had a quorum before Dr. Cohen was present this morning. So just that kind of clarity in the record. As far as starting the meeting, I'm going to turn this over to Margaret, because this really has to do with board process. If you cannot attend, please let Margaret know. And that's why we, Margaret always includes, Ms. Whalen always includes that on the agenda regarding the next board meeting, so we can have a discussion to make sure that everybody is able to attend. So if you would want to just take this over as far as what's your best process for communication from the board members.
Sure. Thank you, Mona. So just briefly, I think it's pretty self-explanatory. I usually do try and ask ahead of time if everyone is still available for the meeting. So in the event that we can find out in advance of a meeting that we don't have a quorum, that's definitely more helpful to the public and to your colleagues for that matter. If we know ahead of time that we need to reschedule the meeting, it's happened in the past. Something comes up and we end up not having a quorum for a meeting when we did expect to have a quorum. it's not a big deal, so don't feel bad if that happens and you're the one who didn't appear for some reason. We totally understand. The meeting just gets rescheduled. So my process is just simply to ask as many questions on the front end regarding attendance and also kind of speaking to Mona's quorum issue. When there are national conferences that you may be attending, like the AOA's optometry meeting, or even the AZOA locally, the November, and I don't know if they still have the spring and fall Congress. If there's going to be either a majority or a possible quorum, I actually just post a public notice stating that it's not a board meeting, but there is potential for a majority or quorum of the board members in attendance, but they will not be discussing board business. So that's just, again, so that we're on the up and up, and it's out there for the public to know that there was a congregation of board members in the same place.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and Ms. Whalen is always very good at that, and we communicate about that. But, yes, and if again, the quorum is dispositive before we can start the meeting, and then no quorum, no meeting. And then, for example, let's say we lose a quorum. Let's say somebody says, I have to be out of here by noon, and the board is, unfortunately didn't get to continue and complete all their business. Then the meeting just ends, and we continue. And those are just kind of, that is one of the bright line rules of the law. And there's not a lot of really, well, there's majority of the law's bright line, but, you know, there is some gray area. But as far as that, none whatsoever. Again, best practice regarding roll call, and this is to kind of address Dr. Moffitt's question as far as the procedure. So I hope that this is reinforcing that what is happening in our board meetings is best practice. The executive director or the board, you know, in this case, will have your licensing administrator will call the roll. Again, it can be Miss Amy Rose, public member, is present, or it could be she could go ahead and call the name. Obviously, we have, you know, Dr. Moffitt, we know that you're a professional member just by your name. She could even, I mean, she could even include Dr. Moffitt, professional member, Miss Galan, public member. She could even go ahead and do that. And usually, of course, staff and board council are going to introduce themselves. And that is also, you know, included on your agenda. So it's very clear who is present. Each person should be recognized by the president before speaking. And again, it's something that, you know, no reminders had to be made today and even in the past, that you announce yourself during the meeting. Some of these other comments, some of these other bullets are more for when we are in person, but there can't be any side conversations. There can't be any whispering. You can't be, texting each other during a meeting. And I know that that would never happen, but just, you know, that kind of goes without saying that that would be inappropriate because all board discussion occurs on the record. And that is very, very important. Only one person speaks at a time. We don't want any interruptions between speakers. And I think because we're on Zoom, it really helps because we can take those verbal cues. I know I've been on some other board meetings where for some reason they weren't able to use a Zoom platform and it was telephonic and it was everybody's being as polite as possible, but there was kind of a lot of overspeaking and that's just a function of it. But I think the way that the board is handling our Zoom meetings, we're able to not have that inadvertent unintended consequence of the electronic means by speaking over or jumping in too soon. I think everybody's polite and wants to say, oh, no, you go first. So I'm really happy to see that. All right. As far as dealing with disruptions, the public does have a right to attend the meeting to take photographs and audio recording or video, but they are not allowed to disrupt the meeting. And as far as the civility policy, that can be enforced if we have individuals that would become disruptive or combative during a board meeting. And it has happened, and not with this board, but it has happened with other boards. If anyone is so disruptive, they the board chair or the board president can give a warning and says if you continue to be disruptive, then we will ask you to leave. And you're able to do that as the board chair. I think, you know, one strong warning is sufficient. And if necessary, if we were in person, the Capitol Police or the police could be called. Now, luckily, in our building, we now have the metal detector and we have the officers that are sitting out front. But prior to moving into this building, when did we move in?
2018,
January of 2018, we were in a building that was opposite the Attorney General's office. And there was no metal detector. There were no officers that were posted out front. So this is more applicable to that kind of venue. If the board has any reason to believe that there is going to be any type of public threat, err on the side of hiring a law enforcement individual or Capitol Police to come and actually sit in the board meeting. I know that a long time ago when I first started, we had to have a police officer that wanded people when we were in the other building and we didn't have another detector because there was a threat. So safety of the board and safety of the public is paramount. Okay, as far as proceeding with the agenda, very clear. Agenda item number 3, motion for rehearing filed by respondent Daniel Baker. As far as going on to saying next item, that's not preferable. It's be very explicit now, turning to agenda item number 4, number 4B. Just be very clear because again, it's part of the recording that everybody is going to, listening to and to make sure that they and so let's say, for example, I mean, this is just a hypothetical. Miss Whalen and I are going back and we want to listen to another audio from, let's say, 2 years ago. If we don't have a clear record, a clear statement of what agenda item they're on, we would be very confused in knowing to be able to review that audio record. So again, clarity, particularly today, I think Dr. Moffitt did a great job regarding the testing center. You were explicit. You read it. And so if we come back in 2 years and we want to listen to that discussion, it's going to be right there. Okay. Notice of board meetings. This is self-explanatory. The public body may discuss, consider, and make decisions only on matters listed on its agenda or matters related to it. And again, there's a lot of discussion that goes into the agenda items to make sure that there is the clarity and that there is compliance with this. As far as taking items out of order, this is the board president's can make that decision. Let's say we have a time scheduled item. Let's say we're going to have an informal proceeding and it's scheduled for 10 o'clock and we're on an agenda item 2. Rather than waiting till 10 o'clock, if there's 15 minutes, the board president can redirect the discussion and say, okay, let's turn to Ms. Whalen's executive director's report and let's discuss this. Or let's say there's a doctor or an attorney that's representing a doctor or even a complainant that says, you know, I can make myself available at 9:30 as a courtesy. Ms. Whalen can communicate that to the board president and you can take that item kind of out of order. And we do have it on there on your agenda that gives notice to the public that items can be taken out of order. Now, if there is a time scheduled item, and usually that would be a formal or informal proceedings, the board cannot consider that, prior to that. So let's say we had a 9:30. We can't go, we're all done. Okay, we did everything. We were all done at, let's say, 9:20. The board would have to take a break or address other items. You can't take it before. But let's say we have 2 time scheduled items. It can be taken after the time. Okay. As far as these are examples of time specific items, the informal interview. And again, we can delve into these and going through the script. that's pursuant to your statute. You have all your have limited disciplinary options and your non-disciplinary options. The board can always dismiss a case and use its non-disciplinary options. You have your formal hearings, which are, again, codified by statutes, and then your motions to deem allegations admitted. And I can just briefly touch on this, or I can circle back because we've been talking for a long time. Gosh, it's been over an hour, hasn't it? It has been. So I can touch on what a motion to deem is, but this is basically a default procedure that in the event that we had a matter scheduled for a formal hearing and the licensee does not respond, they do not give us any communication to indicate that they want to participate in it, the board could proceed as a and treat it as a default to the findings of facts, conclusions of law, and then can consider the disciplinary actions. But we can save that for the future. And then obviously a rehearing or review of any board decision. And I'll just kind of go through these quickly. These are just general guidelines. Speak loudly and clearly. Remember the audios, do not, the no mumbling. And then if we ever get to be all in person, you have to project your voice and make sure that everybody hears you. And sometimes I have a problem with this, so I have to be reminded to project my voice. Use surnames, not first names. Again, it's a formal proceeding and it's the public perception. I don't know. Anybody would ever do this between dom or eating or, you know, having their lunch. That would be completely inappropriate. And then we always want to maintain the appearance of impropriety. We don't want to have any type of conversations that the public could perceive as, oh, they were having a side conversation. So no board business is discussed. If we are all in a board meeting and we're waiting to start the meeting, no board business is discussed. We could say it's a lovely day. There could just be general polite discussion among the members, but definitely no board materials or board action or even anything closely related to what the board does can happen. We want everybody to be respectful. Just even if you feel strongly, have neutral language. Everybody, I think all these board members have wonderful vocabularies, so I'm not going to be worried about sarcasm or any offhand comments. I just think there can be a polite, but it can be a robust disagreement if that ever happens. And just to always be paying attention because the public is watching and is looking to see. Cell phones are only for emergencies. There could be situations where board members were using their cell phones. I don't believe this has ever happened. I've ever seen it, but that would be highly inappropriate. If there was a situation where there was a family emergency or, something was going on, that, board member could say, I will need to be taking a break every hour to check my cell phone, and that could be something that could be accommodated. But again, there shouldn't be any, you know, looking at your cell phone or sending any type of cell phone messages or any kind of text messages. Again, and this is just kind of underscores the importance that the public places on what board members do and say. I mean, you have been appointed by the governor. You play a really important role in the state of Arizona in regulating the profession and issuing licenses and providing information to licensees. So be very careful. You wouldn't want any remark to be anything that you say. Just make sure that it meets the, wouldn't be something that you wouldn't be what in the newspaper, read aloud in corridors, or heard by your mother. So that's just kind of the common sense approach to things. We want to make sure that it is something that is professional. Now, I do want to, at this point, tell you about your communications. Your communications to Ms. Whalen should all be done in a professional manner, because those, all those communications are public records. So there is nothing, the only thing that is not a public record is my attorney-client communications that I have between Ms. Whalen, and I have attorney-client. Yeah, we have the privilege. So those kind of communications would not be divulged, but any other communications that you have would be subject depending on a public records request. And then as far as guidelines, some cases are difficult to decide. You're going to have to talk it out, discuss it, really think about it before you come to the board. Come with an open mind. Listen to the doctor, listen to whoever the complainant is, and then just make a decision. One thing that you as board members are doing are making credibility determinations of the parties. So you will be making those would be your own separate decisions. The burden of proof before this board is a preponderance of the evidence, and preponderance of the evidence is 51%. That's a legal standard. And it can be proven through documentary evidence, through, again, statements made, admissions by parties, can be circumstantial evidence. That's all the evidence that you consider. Some health boards have a higher burden of proof of clear and convincing evidence, but this board is by a preponderance of evidence. Again, make sure that you have the statutes, you have them in front of you. You read the disciplinary options. You are familiar with those sections. We can certainly include those in training, and make sure that you also know the licensure requirements. And that comes a little, I mean, Ms. Whalen, you can comment about that as far as licensing. Those are pretty much put through a filter by you prior to even getting a license application before the board to consider. So you will have all that information. And Ms. Whalen will make sure that if we needed a comment, like, for example, I'm just going to use the criminal background. If there is something that's come up regarding criminal background, Ms. Whalen will contact the licensee and have them provide a personal statement and an explanation to the board. So if you have anything to add to that.
Not too much. As you know, it's 100% staff's job to make sure the applications that come in for licensure are complete before going to the board or before being approved under my delegated authority. So, and all of that is driven by statute. We don't randomly approve applications or accept documentation. We're required by our law to send a deficiency notice that's detailed so the applicant knows exactly what's missing. There's time frames involved. I know you all know this, but I mean, that's how the license applications come to fruition, is through that process. It's in 1722 and 23 of our law, and it's also in 101 and 102 of our rules. It's laid out line by line. So if it's in there, it's required. If it's not, it's not. And that's how the board is able to make its determination should the application go before the board.
All right. Thank
you. It's not, you know, random, like I said, or arbitrary. We're not discussing.
Right, right. I mean, there are specific delineated criteria for licensing that, and they're ensured that they are written that way, and the rules go through a whole rules adoption to make sure that those are clear and concise. So, Ms. Whalen knows the process, and she will put those applications through the process. And then the final slides really have to do is knowing and understanding the law, because that is what the board is here to enforce. You have to be familiar with the statutes, particularly that relates to disciplinary actions and qualifications. And if it's not in the statutes or your rules, it can't be enforced. So to the extent that we think we would like a statute to read a certain way, or we think that we should be regulating something, you have to look within the bounds of the law and put the facts and circumstances through that legal lens, and then make your determination. And
what I always say about regulatory law, and correct me if I'm wrong, the way that we look at statutes is a little bit counterintuitive, if you will, to like how we would normally process something, because sometimes applicants or licensees will read our statutes and say, well, it doesn't say that I can't do it. The problem is it doesn't say that you can. And that's really how all of our statutes and rules are written, as opposed to omission versus we basically say, here's everything that you can do or some things that you cannot do. But it's not assumed that because it says that you can't do it or it doesn't say that you can't do it, that it's acceptable. Does that make sense? Hopefully.
And there's always going to be, I'm always going to have discussion with Ms. Whalen, and I'm always available during board meetings to provide confidential legal advice in executive session if you want like more discussion on interpretation of the law. And then I'm just going to end with this slide. This has to do, this is a 1934 case that the people within my section, which is in the state government division, licensing and enforcement section, and if what the duty of the board is one, to only enforce the laws as written. And if you don't like the law, if you think it should be changed, then that's something that the board can go through, you know, a legislative change to update or whatever, but we can't deviate from the law. The board is required to know and follow the law. And that is, you know, my job as your lawyer. So I'm going to end at that. I think I talked longer than I had intended, but I wanted to include Ms. Whalen's comments so that you can kind of hear that process piece, which I think is very, very important, so you know what goes on before we come to the board meeting and how much preparation there is. So does anybody have any questions until the next time?
This is Dr. Cohen. First of all, Ms. Baskin, that was an excellent presentation. I appreciate your time and effort. I have a logistic question about the new board member training. Is that going to be, what are the logistics? Is it virtual? Is it live? Is it spread out in sections over a period of time?
Well, this counts as it. We already, I think this is over an hour, Margaret. Haven't we talked as well in over an hour? So what I would think logistically, and I'll have Ms. Whalen jump in, but she will keep track of that. She will go back on to, I think she already is, as far as in her previous discussions on legislation, I believe that is counted even as 15 minutes. So my discussion today will count toward that 12 hours. That's certainly why we're really encouraging the board members, even if you can jump on to the virtual parts of the ARBO conference, because I believe that will count toward board member training. And then Ms. Whalen and I will include board training. We can continue every time we have a board meeting. I think I kind of have a roadmap on some ideas that I have to continue. There's just, it's unending, Dr. Cohen. I can talk unending as far as board training. And again, you know, we can ask the auditors to come. We can ask somebody from ADOA to come if you wanted some information from those two entities, that would be helpful to the board. So there's just endless amounts of information that we can use. And, you know, I'll have more discussion with Ms. Whalen and Dr. Moffitt. Maybe we could come up with some other ideas, but it is pretty much endless, and we can tack it on to board meetings, or we can make something available to the board meeting, to the board members that need the training that's outside of board time.
Thank you very much.
All right. You're welcome.
So, Madam President, I will kick it back to you for, I think, our motion to adjourn. Is that where we are?
I think we are. Yeah, so agenda item L, motion to adjourn. Would anyone like to make a motion to adjourn the meeting?
This is Dr. Carpenter. I motion that we adjourn our meeting.
Okay. Is there a second?
Dr. Cohen, I'll second that.
All right. Any further discussion? Okay. So then I'd like to take a vote. We've had a motion to adjourn. Ms. Galan?
Aye.
Thank you. Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
Dr. Mastoris?
Aye.
I also vote aye, so motion passes 5-0. This adjourns our Arizona State Board of Optometry meeting at 10:46.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Have a good afternoon.